Juno Afternoon is made possible with support from Sentinel Coffee, serving Southeast with locally roasted organic coffee and door-to-door delivery. More at sentinelcoffee.com. I'm your host, Shelley Delaney, filling in for Scott Burton today, and my first guests are here to talk about mudrooms. Welcome David Noon from Mudrooms and Bonnie Cheney representing NAMI.
Thank you.
Hi.
Hi, thanks to you both so much for being here today. Just for starters, briefly, David, can you tell our listeners what is Mudrooms for those who don't know or have never attended?
Sure. Well, Mudrooms is a monthly storytelling event. We put it on over at Northern Lights Church. And essentially the format is we have seven storytellers who present a story that somehow orbits the theme for that month. The stories are true, they're personal, and most frighteningly, they're told without notes.
And when you guys hold mudrooms every month, the proceeds go to a nonprofit organization.
Yes.
And the next four proceeds go to NAMI. And so that's what Bonnie's here to talk about. So Bonnie, can you give us a little overview of what NAMI is and what
sure.
they do?
So NAMI Juno is what we're called because we are the local affiliate of the National NAMI Organization. And we provide education and advocacy for people, individuals, families that are living with a mental illness, whether it's themselves or it's mostly loved ones, which is we provide a lot of education classes and support groups for family members or close friends who have a loved one that is living with a mental illness.
What does NAMI stand for? It's an acronym.
Yeah, National Alliance on Mental Illness.
Okay, and so how did this relationship between Mudrooms and NAMI come about?
Well, I think most of us know that Mudrooms provides the proceeds from their events to a local nonprofit. So we filled out an application for this cycle, and we got selected. So we're really delighted that Mudrooms selected us.
All right. So this month's theme is oops, and it just sounds like it's going to be set up for a bunch of funny stories. But what are you hoping to get out? What are your expectations for the stories?
I have not seen any of the previews. We've each month before the performances, a couple of our board members conduct what's called a storyboard event, where it's sort of a dress rehearsal. I was not able to make this past Saturday's event, but we do have seven storytellers. We've got a story about an encounter with a bald eagle and a loaf of bread. We have a story about it's simply described as dad drove car into ocean. That's going to be told by Stephanie Andrew. We have a story from John Greeley about nukes in the Aleutians. So that has always the potential for a big oops. But
and not so funny either.
But yeah, so the stories are, you know, they're always a mix of humorous and sometimes very poignant. And and always it's a supportive environment. So we, you know, we're always looking for new storytellers. In fact, part of our format is that we try to limit returning storytellers to one per month. So the idea is that each month we've got six brand new storytellers getting up on stage in front of a couple of hundred of their closest friends and talking for a little bit.
You mentioned a few folks already. Who are the storytellers this month?
We've got, as I mentioned, Stephanie Andrew, Kate Troll, Jim Fitzer, and I apologize if I botch any of the pronunciations here. Ron Schoenenbach, Jason Schneider, John Greeley, and Paul Dislover.
Great. Sounds like a good lineup. And will there be any live music?
There will. Tom Locker or Loker. Again, I apologize to
it's
Tom
Locker
for the pronunciation. But we always have live music. And that also rotates from one event to the next.
And is price of admission still $7?
$7.
$7. Seven stories, 7 p.m. at Northern Lights United Church.
Indeed.
And the event is tomorrow. So that's February Mudrooms. Bonnie, have you ever told a story at Mudrooms?
I have.
You have?
About a year ago. I think it was last April's storytelling event. And my husband actually he and I told stories back to back because our stories kind of went together. And and I have to admit, I was a little nervous at first, but I did go. And so Tom Cosgrove, which is on the Mudrooms board, he offered to help me. So I went and told him my story, and he gave me some really great advice, which I embraced. And it came off great. If I could think of another story, I'd do it again. But I can't think of one right now.
That's the hard part, yes.
What was the theme for your story? I can't remember that one.
It had, I can't remember. Something like things aren't like as they seem.
Or something
along those lines. They're not quite what they seem. So our... our two stories kind of fit that. It wasn't a perfect fit, but you know, it doesn't have to be a perfect fit. So and it was actually I was like a celebrity for a week. It was kind of fun.
Your 7 minutes of fame, as it were.
My 7 minutes of fame, yes.
David, what's the craziest thing you ever saw at Mudrooms?
Oh goodness, I don't know if I've ever seen anything truly crazy at Mudrooms. The experience of telling a story is crazy enough. I mean, I teach for a living, and so I'm used to talking to people, and I'm used to presenting and speaking in front of sometimes pretty large audiences. But it is always it's a jolt of adrenaline, and it's fun. It's always a good time.
What's your role in Mudrooms tomorrow?
Well, I have no direct role tomorrow. I'm not emceeing or hosting, but my spot on the board this year is largely focused on recruitment. So for March's event, for example, we've got four slots open, or three slots open, rather. So if any folks are out there and have listen to Mudrooms on K2 or have seen Mudrooms live and have thought, you know, maybe I could do that. We do have slots open. The theme for March is way too close. And we also have slots available for April and May as well. But right now we're really focused on trying to get our roster full for March.
What's the date for March Mudrooms?
I believe it is March 12th. It would be the Tuesday of that week. So, yeah, the 12th of March.
Okay. And I was just wondering, how do you guys select the themes?
That's a good question. It's my first year on the board. And I was actually thinking about that this morning. I'm looking forward to the process of selecting next year's themes. But, for everything that we do, it's a collaborative consensus process. We get together and, hammer things out. And so I'm sure that's how it goes with the theme selection.
Well, I think Oops is a good choice. It really opens it up for hilarity to ensue. Bonnie, what do you guys do with the proceeds at NAMI? Do you hope that you'll raise enough money for anything specific?
So we are a nonprofit, and we'll use the proceeds we put on classes, and everything we provide is free of charge to anybody that wants to participate. So we have support groups. We have two different support groups, and we actually just started an online support group, which is for all of Alaska. The others are in-person support groups. We call something a family-to-family class, which is if you have a loved one, an adult loved one that's dealing with a mental health issue, you can come to that class and just learn about mental health, what different diagnoses mean, how to talk to your loved one, which is a really tricky thing. We also offer a class for parents of children and adolescents who are dealing with mental health issues. It can also be grandparents or caregivers. I should cover that. That's all free of charge. And we also have a four-hour seminar we give, which is kind of like a taste of what we do in the bigger classes. So if you're not quite sure you're ready to commit to a bigger class, you can attend that. And all of our instructors and support facilitators have what we call lived experience. So we all have a loved one who is living with a mental health issue. So if you talk to us, we get it. So there's a lot of comfort in that, and talking to somebody that really understands what you're going through.
NAMI is a great resource for our community.
Yeah, so, thanks.
And Mudrooms is a great resource as well, and highly entertaining. So it sounds like a beautiful friendship.
Yeah.
Again, Mudrooms is tomorrow night, 7 p.m., 7 stories, $7 for admission at Northern Lights United Church. And I do want to mention that this month's Mudrooms will be rebroadcast on KTOO on Monday, March 18th, 7 p.m. David, Bonnie, anything else you two would like to add today?
Not that I can think.
Well, I'll plug one other event we're going to have. The
okay.
first Friday in April, and I'm sure we'll be back on here to talk about it. We're having our big fundraiser, which is called Comedy for a Cause.
Oh, so. Yeah. That's a, that's always a good time.
Yeah. Yeah. It's been pretty popular the last several years.
I think the last.
Hopefully we get another big crowd this year.
Yeah. Last couple of years in a row, I've interviewed folks for that event. And it's always a fun interview and a fun time as well.
Thanks.
David Noon, Bonnie Chaney, thanks so much for being here today. Mudroom skins tomorrow night. And coming up next, I have a story from last month's Mudrooms. The theme was Time and Tide. And this one is told by our newly appointed city, Juneau City and Borough Assemblywoman, Alicia Hughes Scandies.
And without any further noodling, I think we'll bring up our first speaker sitting in the Iron Throne over here to my right, Alicia Hughes Scandies. Who first learned it's good to have notes, even though Alicia is one of my best friends. She first learned to swim at the North Charleston Community Center in West Virginia. She learned first to clear a snorkel in the Atlantic Ocean at the age of 8, and she moved to Alaska, to Juneau, 14 years ago. So please welcome Alicia Hughes Scandies.
My dad had a dream that I drowned when I was little, and he was not the kind of guy who got easily freaked out by his dreams, so this one really spooked him because he told me about it, so we could both, you know, make sure it didn't happen. And my whole family loved being around the water. Growing up, our family vacation spot was in the Florida Keys at least once a year. We would go down there for a week, and we'd swim, and we'd snorkel, and I looked forward to it the rest of the year. I was in the water wings when I was little, then the swimming lessons, so I really loved being in the water, but I was the youngest in my family, so I was the shortest, and perhaps, you know, the least experienced, so I was outside my comfort zone in the ocean pretty early. I remember the first time that we rented a boat and went snorkeling off of the boat instead of the beach. The chop, it swamped my snorkel many times. I swallowed a lot of seawater. I ended back on the boat crying in a towel, watching the rest of them. So when I was 10, my grandmother was dying, and my grandmother lived in Jacksonville, Florida. And we loved going to Jacksonville, because at the Jacksonville Beach, there were real waves. In the Florida Keys, the water is shallow and calm. So anytime we could play in the surf, we were really excited. And with a quiet house full of stressed out adults who are grieving, anytime my dad could take my brother and I to the beach, he would go for it. So my dad had taken my brother Corin and I to the beach on this day. It was gray and overcast, choppy water. Lifeguard was on duty, a couple of beachcombers. That was it. Should have been a clue. And Corin and I, as soon as we got in the sand, you know, we took off for the water. My dad set out a lawn chair, got on the beach with his newspaper. That was his stress relief. And Corin and I were mixing it up in the water. We're playing games that, you know, kids that age do. We're splashing each other, trying to dunk each other, trying to convince the other person that there's a shark right behind you. I'm not kidding. And we're having a grand old time. And we're a little bit deeper in the water than I wanted to be, because Corin was taller and a little bit braver. And I found that if I kind of submerged myself, put my head up, and stretched out my toes, I could just feel the sandy bottom, which was reassuring. And all of a sudden, the waves kind of changed. I started getting slapped around in the face by them, and it was starting to come over my head. So I did the thing where I stretched out my foot to feel for the bottom just to reassure myself, and I couldn't feel the bottom. And not only that, I could tell I was nowhere near the bottom. It was way over my head. It was cold, rough water down there. I looked over my shoulder back at the beach, and the lifeguard tower was a lot shorter, and Dad seemed a lot further away. I look back at Corin, and I see he's also getting beat up by the waves. And my brother and I have always been close, so we looked at each other. We didn't really have to have a chat about this. We knew we both wanted to get in, and quickly. So we turned toward shore, but we had also been raised really strictly with the buddy system, so you can't leave the person you're swimming with. So as we turned and we're trying to make progress, we're kicking as hard as we can, we're swimming, every couple of strokes I gotta stop and see if Corin's coming or if he's doing okay in the water. So I'm not making it very far. Similarly, I see Corin start to make progress, look for me, he gets sucked right back to where I am. So we do this a couple of times, getting knocked around by the waves. My heart is starting to pound. I'm swallowing seawater. I'm getting really panicky. Another wave comes over my head, and when I come up from the water, I hear Corin shouting, "Help!" to the lifeguard. And my heart sank because this was so serious. We'd never called for help. And now I know it's not just me being a scared baby. Corin is every bit as afraid as I am in that moment. So after my heart sinks, then I feel the relief of, yeah, that's what lifeguards are for. We've got one right there on the beach. My dad's a good swimmer. The adults are gonna come in and save the day. So I turn and I start shouting, "Help, help!" We're waving frantically. And it took no time at all to discover they can't hear us. Lifeguard's still holding the lifeguard thing, looking out, scanning the beach. Dad's still there with the paper, sitting on the lawn chair. So Corin and I now know if we're getting out of this, it's on our own power. So we have a little pep talk, and he says, "Just keep swimming." But this was pre-Finding Nemo, so it was stressful. Just keep swimming. It's not a happy just keep swimming. So we turn, and what basically we had given each other permission to do was to stop looking to see if the other one was coming. So we turn, and we're kicking, and we're swimming as hard as we can. My heart's pounding, and it seems like the waves are maybe letting up a little bit. So I risk looking up, and I see that Corin is right there with me. He's stopped as well. We're about to where we had been playing before. He puts his feet down. We turn, we make eye contact. We start laughing hysterically, because we're so relieved. And as we start laughing, crash, wave behind us, sucks us right back out instantly to where we were or further. And at that point, I was just thinking, this is how I die. We're so stupid that we didn't keep going in. But I'm really just so sad, and it's the first time in my life that I thought, God, this is so short. It's not how I wanted to die. And I can tell Corin's thinking similar thoughts because he screams, "Don't stop till we get to shore," and just takes off. So I follow him and I'm kicking and I'm, you know, my heart's racing and I want to cry, but I'm just head down kicking as hard as I can. I don't even notice if the waves change at this point. I don't notice the water shifting. I think I hear someone screaming and I hear someone say, "Stand up, stand up." And I look, and the water is to Corin's knees. We're back in. But I don't stop swimming until I crawl onto the beach. Thank you.